We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Welcome back, everyone, to another edition of the Big Blue Banter Podcast. Here with myself, my co-host Nick Turchin, we're here to break down what we saw on the All-22 Coaches film from the Dallas Cowboys-New York Giants Week 2 game. I'm a little more positive than people think. After rewatching that game, Nick's going to probably be a little more negative, though I do have some negative takes coming, don't worry. Not just a team company guy. And then we're going to also preview the Houston Texans games coming up and why I think the Giants could get a win here and how the Giants get back on the board. And then lastly, we are going to take all your questions that you guys delivered us on Twitter. Keep those coming. I love that part of the show that we've added on, the Twitter back and forth, the Q&A. We get a chance to dive into stuff that, you know, we want to talk about. Sometimes we might not remember. We might not think to get on the show in our show plan. So, Nick, how you doing today?
Doing very well. Psyched to get after it. Like the questions, too, that we get for the podcast or people asking me. I've been asked some very, like, just pointed questions that are exactly that have made me better this week. So I'm psyched. I'm psyched to keep on doing this.
Yep. All right. Well, let's start by jumping into our review of the game, the Dallas Cowboys-New York Giants Week 2 game, what we saw on the All-22 Coaches film, what we think that we can look at and take in moving forward based on that. We're going to obviously start with Eli Manning, the evaluation of the quarterback play for the New York Giants. It's probably number one topic this week, except for the offensive line. We're going to dive into the offensive line issue as well. We're probably not going to hit it as in-depth as maybe some other podcasts or some other things you've seen because it's been beaten like a dead horse. But we will hit the key points there anyway. But first, I'm going to throw it to you, Nick. Give me your evaluation of Eli Manning's play, and then I'll tell you what I saw.
Gotcha. Yeah. For me, in this game was a little bit different than week one. I kind of saw it, then kept on coming back to it, and then ended up writing a piece on it for cover1.net. And it was specifically about Eli Manning and his mental processing. And first off, when we get into this, this is a one-game evaluation. It's not like I'm making a projection or saying that he's done this his entire career. It's just it was odd that in this game specifically, I saw his mental processing at some points break down, at other points just not be as nearly as good as it was in previous years. Or in previous games, for that matter. And I broke down, outlined four plays. But just by way of background, instead of like jumping into the whole piece, I saw like 12 plays that were questionable. I whittled that down to like 8, and questionable across the board in terms of placement, in terms of overall play calling. Just 12 plays that just stood out that usually you don't see. I whittled that down to 8 that kind of hit Eli specifically with either placement, pocket composure, or mental processing, and ultimately decided on mental processing for 4 in the 4 examples. And there were 4 plays that we're not looking at that saying, or looking in a quarterback evaluation, trying to say like, hey, if he had done this, we would have, the game would have been won. That's not the point. It's more just to see that within week two of this offense where he stands. And Dan's made this point on Twitter a few times. You know, Manning is still taking it all in and having, you know, and still learning a new offense and learning what he should be doing within that, you know, within that, based upon what he's seeing defensively.
Yeah, I mean, Nick, I'll be honest here. I'm going to jump in too and say that I know a lot of people are probably expecting me to say otherwise, but I also had major concerns with what I saw from Eli Manning in this game from a processing standpoint. And I believe there were a lot of routes where I saw where there was a couple in mind with Evan Engram. You broke down one of them, the deep over route, and I believe there was another one where he really just looked off. He came back to – the read was designed on the far left of the field. He came back to it. He missed, completely missed Engram, who was running over the middle of the field wide open in a void, and then checked it down to Barkley. What I saw is a lot of Eli moving through his progressions way too fast to the check down to Barkley. Now, what I wonder is that by design? Was that something where Eli Manning said – Eli Manning and Pat Shermer, because a lot of this happened in the second half where I noticed – some of Eli's biggest breakdowns from a processing standpoint and some of the, you know, open receivers he missed were more so in the second half. And I think maybe it's possible at least to think that maybe, just maybe, at halftime, Pat Shermer, Eli Manning, Mike Shula, they got together, they said, listen, this pass rush is getting there extremely fast. We're not protecting. We can't fix this, these protection issues in one game. So work fast that check down read to Barkley because he can make some things happen after the catch. So that's something I wonder about, but aside from that, he was just missing far too many. There were big plays you talked about. I know it was that. I believe what was the route with Odell Beckham Jr.?
That one I'm looking at right now in Excel, on our tape. This one was a cover two read, and we've kind of highlighted that two deep safeties maybe kind of pre-snap, maybe kind of give him a little bit of hiccups over the years, and he's got to kind of move. He's got to work his way through that. And he's maybe a little slower. This one was weird because the read is to the left. The progression starts to the left, and that's key for people to understand. As an aside, I've seen a lot of stuff on Twitter where guys are kind of liking to circling the open receivers that are down the field, like right off the bat. That's not how this works. The quarterback is working through a progression, so there's an order in which things go, and if that guy's open at that point, it's just a lot of times he may not even be in the read, or it may just be something that he hasn't gotten to yet. So you kind of can't hit him there. On this one, though, which is really funny, and this is a good one really to break down because I think this was the strongest example where it's like, hey, what more do you want? So on this play, it was a second down and 10. The Giants come out 11 personnel. It's a 3-by-1 side to the left. So Manning's got to make a play to the left, to the trip side if he wants to go that way. And basically, it's also a bunch. And the bunch is interesting because it brings everyone in, right? And you've got Odell Beckham in the Z, and he's facing a very clear two-deep safety look pre-snap. Snaps the ball, looks to the left. I forget what the first part of the read was, but the play design was great because you had a divide route or a seam route running right down the middle. So it's splitting those two safeties, taking their eye line and making them worry about the deepest threat. And then you have Beckham running this what's called a buzz and go, where he kind of runs out almost at like 80-90%, just gets to the second level, stutter steps a little bit, and then boom, he's gone to like basically the corner or a fade route. And the corner to that side, you know, he's in a clear course cover two technique where he's basically, his hips are parallel to the sideline. So if he wants to turn north and follow him, he's got to flip his hips and go. And, you know, look, there's no better play. There's no better way to get it, a look to get against cover two. And Manning just didn't want to throw that for whatever reason. I'm not in his head. I don't know. That to me is like, you want the guy at the key point of the game to step up and deliver the ball to your best player.
Yeah, and you know what? It's not just these plays that we can pick out. And there's a bunch, because I have a bunch in my notes. But what also worried me about Eli Manning was I thought that, and again, this could have a lot to do with the fact that this Cowboys defense was getting pressure consistently and fast, really, really fast, within 2.5 seconds. And there were times, by the way, there was a big play where really could have shifted the momentum on 3rd and 8, Giants 49, in the second quarter with 7:07 after they had converted 2 fourth downs. Where literally the running back blows this play. The running back, I believe it was Barkley at the time. I have to double check, 26 or 28 there. Pretty sure it was Barkley. Does not pick up the pass protection. I don't know if this is on Eli. And this is something that I really don't know, Nick. You can maybe, after I make this point, dive into this, who you think that if some of these blown, you know, if some of these free blitzers we saw, because I saw a lot of free blitzers. Some of these free blitzers are on the quarterback, the running back, I don't know, the offensive line coach, but, you know, this is a 3rd-and-8 play where if the running back picks this play up, Manning has time to hit Sterling Shepard on a vertical route out of the slot here. You look at the play on all 22, Shepard is open. He doesn't have time. The running back, you know, the running back completely doesn't pick up the free blitzer, and it's a sack, and it's a, or I believe Manning actually scrambled back to his left and threw it incomplete, but the point is they had to punt, and that was a big momentum swing. And then earlier in the game, a similar play, 2nd-and-5. Giants had a screen set up to Evan Ingram, and I don't know what the recognition on this play was by Eli Manning, but it looked to me like he got a little bit tricked by, and I put this one on Twitter in case you guys want to come back and check. He looks like to me like he got a little tricked by the Cowboys safety. It looked like he was dropping into a deep zone, but then attacked down on the check down to Barkley. If this is a better throw, it doesn't matter. I think Barkley's going to turn this into a big play, but he had an easy, easy first down, an easy 15 yards with Evan Ingram on the screen back to the left. And then later in the game, the Giants actually made a nice halftime adjustment, came back to this screen later in the game with 5:49 to go on 1st-and-10, where the Giants ran that final drive where they scored a touchdown on, the touchdown of Evan Ingram. And they came back to it, and they ran the screen back to the left, and it was an 11-yard gain and a first down. But to me, some of the things, again, that bothered me with Eli was all the things Nick talked about was – his footwork and his movement in the pocket was not what I've seen from him in the past. Looks like he just kind of – I don't know if that's what because he was got rattled. There was a play I put on Twitter where, you know, Will Hernandez takes out Tyrone Crawford out of the play, opens up this huge hole for Manning to step up to. Instead, he checks down and, you know, he can't get his feet placed to Will Hernandez. Now, the play was covered. If Manning tries to throw at the time or steps through and throws right away, it's going to be an incomplete, but – he steps through. He has a clean, clean pocket where he can reset his feet, and I think Odell Beckham can get open in a void over the middle of the field, in the deep middle of the field. So just some of those issues. Nick, I have a question for you with Eli Manning, something that I saw a little bit of but not that much of, but did you see an issue with him keeping his eyes down the field once the pocket kind of collapsed on him and he was forced to move in the pocket?
Yes, but not as bad as other – Briefly, for brief times. In general, he would not go out of he's not someone to go out of structure often. So it's not like he had to complete that process and then go outside the pocket and then keep his eyes downfield. But I guess what I'm saying, to answer your question, to be clear, yes, but not for like rookie increments of time where they completely lose and they get tunnel vision. I didn't see tunnel vision. I saw more of brief looks down to more anticipating pressure that wasn't there, like right, like shifts that don't make sense, to hesitating, like pumps that don't make sense, or willing to pull it, or willingness to, a quickness to pull down where, to pressure that wasn't there.
Right. And I know, you know, everybody pointed out that play in the red zone where Barkley kind of ran free and Eli, they say that Eli didn't pick his eyes up as he got smashed moving through the pocket and destroyed in the red zone. That was a big hit. That was one of the biggest hits I've ever seen Eli take. But, you know, you can cherry pick plays like that every game from every quarterback, I think. So I'm with you on that one, Nick. But we'll transition a bit here to some of my other issues with this game, because I do believe it was a three-prong failure by the Giants offense. Eli Manning, the offensive line, which we'll get to. And then this one, which I want to jump into before we get into the offensive line, which was the play calling issues I had with Pat Shurmur. So we'll touch on the red zone stuff because that's where I have the biggest issue with Shurmur. But I actually saw a lot of plays that were just covered really well by the Dallas Cowboys. And it looked like, you know, based on the routes combinations he was using, the play never had a chance. Is that something that you saw as well in this game, Nick?
Yeah. And, you know, actually, you know, who made a good point was Dan Pizzuta of SB Nation. He kind of brought up, too, he was surprised at how many isolation routes that he saw when he looked at the tape. And that's a really good point. And it's something that, you know, we've talked all about the combination routes, and I've written like 15,000 words on the combination routes. But Shurmur does run a fair amount, like everyone does, of ISO routes. I did see, though, a lot more in this game. And I did wonder if that had something to do with him trying to alleviate the call it maybe the timing issues that Manning was having in the first game. And I don't think they were widespread, but I think that Manning, you know, as kind of Kurt Warner highlighted earlier in last week, that Manning's kind of strength is see it and throw it, and being an athlete, that's a little bit tired. That's a little closer to isolation routes. So that maybe would have been going, what was going on, but that was more of a guess by me. But in general, yeah, no, I think that they were running a lot of ISO routes and there was a lot of stuff that was just covered. And that's just that happens when you do that. When you don't scheme your guys open, they have to win every play, and they're not going to win every play against a lot of the secondaries in this league.
Yeah, you got to give this Cowboys defense credit. I know people aren't onto them yet. They weren't a great defense in 2017, but I think this Cowboys defense is really, really an up-and-coming defense. People are soon going to be like, okay, wow, what did we miss this defense has a lot of talent. Jalen Smith and Sean Lee at that second level with Vander Ash, who was more of a rotational player. But really, that secondary is extremely underrated right now. There was a ball that Eli threw to Shepard out of the slot that he really put in a perfect spot on a vertical route out of the slot. And Shepard doesn't come down with the catch, the big momentum swing, but really it's just perfect coverage by the cornerback Brown on that play. And I saw that a lot, really good coverage across the board. But I'm going to dive into the issues I had with Shermer in the red zone. There were plays where, I don't know, did you see the play? Obviously you saw this play. The play, when they get in the red zone the first time, they get to the 3-yard line, they have the holding call on Rhett Ellison. Now, I have a problem right from the start with this drive, with this red zone drive, because it's first and goal on the 3. Odell Beckham Jr. is essentially isolated, again, just like we talked about last week with the Jacksonville Jaguars game, and the ball doesn't go to him. The ball doesn't go to him on a slant, on a fade, whatever it may be. It's a run play to Saquon Barkley. It's doomed from the start, and Rhett Ellison gets called for the hold. Now it's first and 13. Do you think that the Giants have to look at this, some of this tape and some of their red zone drives and say, hey, if we have Beckham one-on-one, we have to find a way to change the play to throw to him?
I think, yeah, from a 10,000-foot view, they absolutely have to do that, because you kind of have to find your identity a little in the red zone. Like, are you going to kind of scheme your way in, or are you going to do what got you there in a tighter, quicker frame? Because in the red zone, everything just happens like in an instant. You know, there's two reads, and then the play goes out of structure, all that type of stuff. So, you know, on that specific play, I'm not really sure, but on from 10,000 feet, absolutely, because everyone who was watching really pointed out, when you have the runs out of 13 personnel from first and this is the one that I'm remembering from like first and whatever, first and 10, first and 11. It's like, that's kind of at the statistically, you're not helping yourself there. And that's what I think they need to do a little bit more of there is help themselves. And I think, you know, and I've said this, I'm like, people think I'm like a Latimer bull forever, but you've got guys that can high point. You've got guys that can use their body to win in isolation routes, like Cody Latimer. Like, that's where he can help you. You've got guys like, you know, maybe if Engram is not that type of player yet, per se, you know, there are many options on this Giants defense. And then, of course, you got to get your big guys in, like Odell, and not in necessarily in orbit swing passes or reverses like the first game, you know, in routes that where they can really win.
Right, and so now we're in first and 13 after the holding call. And again, like I said, Nick, and I don't want to harp on like these cherry picking these plays, but you know, we saw examples of what we just broke down in the first game as well. So now we're in first and 13. We're designing a run play in first and 13 out of, again, another tight personnel, a heavy tight personnel. To begin with, I don't like this call. But then you have Odell Beckham doing that motion behind the line of scrimmage, which we saw in the first game. And as he motions to the right side, the cornerback doesn't follow him. So at the snap, there's going to be Beckham and I believe the far receiver. I don't remember. I think it was 87. I think it was Shepard. Basically in two guys against one coverage out there with a safety more towards the middle, of the field, a little shaded to that side. I think this immediately has to be audible into a pass to Odell Beckham right away. Is that first of all, do you agree with that, Nick? And second of all, who's to blame for that? Eli or Shermer or whoever, or who's to blame there?
So the orbit motion is definitely candy to help open up my main candy, meaning eye candy. Greg Cosell has a great quote. There is no window dressing in this league. They don't do things just to make things look better. They do things for specific reasons. So you're taking your best player and basically using him as a distractor. And what you're hoping is first of all, you get a cue into what the coverage is. So if the guy gets followed, it's man. If they bump out like they did, you know it's zone. So right. the player that bumped out, I believe, was the hook defender on that side. He was a linebacker, so he bumps out a little bit. And Dan's point is, hey, listen, if Obell's in space against the linebacker, he's gonna win.
Exactly.
The question is, can you really can't audible, because unless if it's designed that way, which it totally can be, you can it would effectively be a pre-snap RPO. You could 110% do that. I just don't think they planned that. I think that it was actually supposed to be candy, and they did want to run the – I actually have it down here. They ran the mid-zone play to Wayne Gallman. I love Wayne Gallman, but, you know, like that, like Dan saying, that's not what we're really looking for. So I like the idea, but I don't know if they could have done that game. They could definitely plan around that now that they put the tape out, for sure.
Yeah, so you know what? I'm happy you said that, Nick. Before this, I really didn't know. Based on what you just broke down, I take the blame away from Eli Manning here. I don't think he had any option here to audible out of this and throw to Odell Beckham. But the Giants need to put that in before. I think you should They should have this run pass option on this type of play, especially down here in the red zone. Anyway, we move on to second and 13, and somehow the Giants find themselves in a situation where they have seven guys protected, seven guys in pass protection, and a running back who then leaks out into the middle of the field, but he's in the beginning. The Cowboys blitz, rush four, and somehow immediately get pressure. The Giants are running two, I guess they're deep over. What are they considered, over routes?
That was basically like a two-man mesh. Like, oh, like if you just have the mesh part, nothing else, yeah. Just the two-man mesh.
They're meshing over the middle of the field, and there's six Cowboys defenders for two guys, Beckham and Shepard. How is this play ever going to work, first of all, is what I'm asking you. What's the goal of this play here? Is the goal just to get Beckham in the corner of the end zone where they can kind of throw on the opposite field aside of where he lined up, and they can kind of throw a jump ball, and by that point he'll have beaten those defenders? Or is the goal to get a natural pick at the mesh point? Or what's the goal here? I'm just wondering.
What is it that they're doing here? But I would say it depends on man or zone. So the hope is both. This time, I believe, and God, I could be wrong, but I believe they were playing cover three, which is just an embarrassing coverage to play in the red zone because it leaves the slant wide open for an easy touchdown. But let that be that as it may, I believe they're playing basically some form of cover three match, something where you have three deep. And the hope there is that it kind of creates a natural pick. But if you can envision cover three, you've got the deep thirds where both receivers are going in terms of those two mesh routes, those two crossing routes, kind of running right into it. So it's kind of dead from the beginning. And then you had Ellison and Engram, two tight ends, both get beaten. Like, I think it wasn't a 2-on-1, but they both got beaten on the front side.
Seven guys in pass pro, and four guys ended up rushing the pass.
Correct. Right. So it could have been a double team. It very well could have been, but it's one of those things. It's just it was not their best moment.
And we're not going to harp too much longer on the play calling. We've got a lot to get to here, but these are the type of plays that really change a game. There's a lot. If they score a touchdown here, the momentum is completely different. And once they have that late drive with 5:49 and they scored a touchdown on that drive, now we're talking about 20-14 and they had a great onside kick, so they would have recovered. Who knows what could have happened? This was that kind of game where you can't blow these opportunities in the red zone. But we're going to move on. There were a lot of plays that I noticed, and we'll talk about a couple on defense in a little bit that could have changed this game. But we're going to move on a little, and I want to throw it to Nick here because he's done a lot of work on Cody Latimer, a receiver who made a really big play in this game when Eli Manning actually threw a really nice ball on a go route down the right sideline. And Latimer made a really good, pretty tough catch, in my opinion, and a really good play on that. So do you think that Cody Latimer is someone who the Giants have to scheme to get more involved moving forward, Nick?
Yeah, for sure. And yes, I do. And I apologize if we have mentioned this before in the podcast. I probably have just because I feel like I've been saying it all over and over. But out of 3-by-1 wide receiver sets, which the Giants, we've all seen many of them this season, and quite frankly, across the league, that one wide, the one lone X wide receiver, I think that he's their best option because he can use his body control, he can use his size, and he can use his hands to win one-on-one against in most cases, the boundary corner. And that's huge. That changes the game because what you end up seeing is that it helps the trip side because you'll take deep safeties, and the deep safeties will want to pay attention on that side. You'll know that you can't just leave that corner and boundary lock. It will literally open up things for the other side where you'll have your combination routes in a much more even keel than kind of the trip side, just constantly focusing, especially when they go to zone, constantly focusing on Beckham.
Yeah. And so again, that's just something that they need to look at. Take a look and see the opportunity and take advantage of it, quite frankly. I want to transition real quick to Saquon Barkley just because I've seen some people, some pretty big names on Twitter saying that they've been disappointed with what they've seen from Saquon Barkley these first two games. I'm going to dive into this first, Nick, and then I'll get your takeaway. Well, after watching maybe less so in that Jaguars game, let's just say. I thought he had a good game there, but this Cowboys game, that was the best single game, I think, given the opportunity he had and the space he had, the best game I've seen from a Giants running back in the Eli Manning era. The way he created space, the way he broke free of the first tackler, created space after the catch in really tight spots. I thought he did an excellent job finally of planting his foot, taking the yardage that was given to him in the middle of the field on the rare times the Giants decided to run. And remember, Barkley only got getting two carries in the first 25 plays and only 11 in the game. The Giants have the lowest average in the NFL of yards before contact for a running back, so that's not good. Worst in the league there. So to me, I don't understand the Saquon Barkley criticism. I thought he looked awesome out there and really could help this offense if they can get things going. What did you see, Nick?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I wrote contact balance in my notes 10 times.
Yeah.
12 times. I don't know if I've ever done that for a single player in a single game. I think he defines elusive in the way he elusive, meaning kind of as he's making his jukes. It's very hard for me as a guy watching it on film to know where he wants to go. I don't know. He's a talent. He's a total talent. And, you know, you also, I think he's got a lot of raw emotion too, that he shows too, in terms of, you know, the guy wants it. And so that was great to see him featured that much in the beginning of the game, maybe not on a carry basis, but from a reception basis. I think it was maybe overloaded a little bit. But, you know, I he's going to be that dual threat, and that's huge. So I would definitely not see, you know, it's hard to see criticism. I think where the criticism is really going to go, you know, and it's kind of to bring it up, but like, look, like if you're going to run outside zone into the boundary, and I know I've said it a billion times here, but that's just not what the giant line is built to do. And so guys love to criticize that play where he lost 3 yards, where he just was basically the play where Taco Charlton had a holding call that was not called. Taco Charlton basically grabbed Jalapio's, he horse collared him as the guy's trying to make a reach block across the play. So that was kind of a joke. But people were commenting on, like, Omame and the backside seal blocks that were trying to be made. They're like, hey, these guys can't move at all. It's like, well, listen, that's not my answer would be, well, listen, that's not what they're not designed to do that. These are bigger offensive linemen. They're not supposed to be climbing to the second level every play, trying to cut off linebackers who are 100 pounds, not 100, but much, much, you know, less of body size than they are. I think it's a tougher game. I think I was thinking this week, you know, the whole goal is to get Barkley in space, right? I think the Giants would be better off basically running read option with Tanny and just chucking and just automatically giving the ball to Barkley. The quarterback would get annihilated, but guess what? You'd get Barkley in space. Like, they'd be better off doing that than outside zone.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And I don't see where these criticisms are coming from personally. I do think there are some critiques to be made, like you said, about the Giants run blocking scheme right now. I saw far too many run plays that were doomed from the start. There were a couple plays where they tried to get, like, Eric Flat, the guard and the tackle, the second level. And before he can get to the second level, the defensive ends come crashing back down to stop the play before Barkley even gets to the second level. The issues I had with this game too from Pat Shurmur were there were some plays in the run game that worked and they just didn't go back to them. Like, a lot of good play callers in the NFL, like, I know Bruce Arians was like this. It's not a new play every single play. When you have stuff that works, you make the defense try to stop it. And I don't know if you agree with me on that, Nick, but I think that was definitely a problem in this game.
I think definitely they'll go back and they'll look at the split zone runs that they had that were successful with Barkley. They'll look at the stuff that they introduced a new wrinkle, which I love, a little tight end dart play, tight end leading from a side angle, basically in the A gap. They ran that play twice. They're going to see more of that type of stuff. So yeah, there were definitely some highlights, but for this game alone, there were more negatives.
Yep. But let's flip it. We've got to wrap up at some point in this review because we got to get to the preview. But let's flip it real quick to the defensive side of the ball. I know you did a lot of work on this, Nick. Why do you think the Giants keep having so many failures against the zone read option run?
I think that there's a massive level of misunderstanding for what really happens on a zone read. And I broke out my part one on Twitter and a thread today. I'm going to have basically parts two and parts three over the next day and a half. And there's a lot of comments. Guys were asking Betcher questions today at the for the press conference and watching in practice to see how they're going to change how they defend the zone read. And just to kind of take it real quick, like, the zone read is just a run with a quarterback keeper option attached to it. And the key for fans to understand is when we talk about zone read, the biggest key is that the running back, or to know that it's zone read, the running back is going in one direction and the quarterback, if he keeps it, is going to end up in the opposite direction. Now, defending that becomes very difficult because it's a little bit of pick your poison. Either you play to force the give to the running back, in which case, if you do that, you're going to have a slight numbers disadvantage on the running game. Or if you do what the Giants did in the beginning parts of the game, you crash the running back with the defensive end, you're going to allow the quarterback to basically have advantage if he wants to run the ball, and your players that are basically assigned to him have to get off their blocks. And quite frankly, they did not. So the Giants are going to try to do different. The Giants will, as they did in the Dallas game, which I get to in parts two and three of my thread coming up, they did adjust with a couple of things, but you still have to get off your blocks, and you still have to have either the pressure is going to go on the secondary directly, the overhang, specifically the overhang defender on that side, or it's going to go to the linebacking core. You can't do anything else this play. And there's a reason, you know, many people may kind of step up that aren't familiar with it and go, well, why doesn't every team do this? And the thing is, if you elect the keeper option, you're having your quarterback run downfield basically where he has to take a shot, and that most teams won't allow and won't do, obviously, because of how few really good quarterbacks there are in this league. So it's something where the Cowboys absolutely ran it more last game against the Giants, and they definitely keyed on that crashing defensive end. But this is not that the entire defense was fooled. This is not that they have no idea what they're doing. This is assignment football, and they just could not get off their blocks. So the scheming will help in some cases. But even when they schemed, Dallas had a couple nice answers, which the Texans will have as well. And so it comes to that game where it comes down to getting off your blocks.
Yeah. I mean, I'm with you on that. And this helps me kind of transition into the next part, the Texans preview. Is this something you see the Giants can, do you believe the Giants will be able to successfully shut this down versus Deshaun Watson?
I think that with what Watson in Houston does is even more evolved than just zone reads. They run all different types of regular options. And again, a regular option is one where the quarterback and the running back, if the running back is coming with him as the pitch option, they're both going to the same side. And so the Texans have a fair amount of that. They've got a fair amount of basically jet motion type of wrinkles in there where they get additional pitch option. It almost becomes like a triple option. So the answer is, I think they're going to be keying in on it more this week. And I definitely think they can, because it does play into the athletic edge players and athletic linebackers that need to make plays. And so I do think they totally can. I think that you have to have, and not to single them out, but I don't think Landon Collins really had the best game. Two of those plays specifically where he needed to get off his block. One, he did. He just couldn't make the play. You have to have very aggressive overhang defenders that are willing and able to basically make that stop when it needs to be made. So to answer that specifically for Houston, I definitely think they can. I think it's going to be part of what they're doing. I don't think it's going to be the whole thing. I think there's more. I think Houston wants to give that ball with Watson, because Watson alone is not, I don't think he's really, he's not where he was last year in terms of his confidence. And I don't think they want him scrambling around as much, believe it or not. I think that they want Lamar Miller and they want Alfred Blue, their running backs, taking that ball in a give read.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. Based on what I've seen as well from this Texans offense over the first 2 weeks, I think they're also kind of slow playing Watson as he returns from this major injury. And I want to make a quick point before I get on to the next topic about Landon Collins. I agree with you, Nick. Not only was I not impressed with him from week two, also from week one. I've actually, since Collins joined this Giants team, I've actually never seen him show up fewer times in a positive way on tape than in these past two games. I don't know if he's having an issue transitioning to his new role in James Betcher's defense or what's going on right now, but it's not the Landon Collins we all, grew to know and love during that 2016 season. And when and if he kind of gets back into that form, it's going to make a major difference for this defense. But I'll transition to another point I want to bring up here, and that's how can the Giants get more pressure in general, and how can they get pressure on Deshaun Watson this game? Because the Giants enter this week against the Texans this game with the lowest adjusted sack rate according to Football Outsiders. However, from my review of these games on All-22, I actually think the Giants have schemed up pressure in a pretty solid way, considering the fact that Connor Barwin, I've only really seen win once on a one-on-one pass rush rep. Lorenzo Carter, who I thought was awesome as far as a play speed goes in this game, and we'll get to more of that later. He's not there right. He's not where he needs to be yet from a pass rush move standpoint, and really from his technique and things like that. So they don't exactly have the guys on the horses on the field to win these one-on-one matchups. So that may be playing a role into it. But I think in this game, I think it's definitely possible the Giants pass rush in general can wake up. I mean, you look at the Texans; they're one of the few teams in the NFL who's doing nearly as bad as the Giants are from a pass protection standpoint. You have, I'm just going to go by the PFF numbers and you can get into it after. You have basically a former, I believe he was a seventh round pick, Julian Davenport, was he? Or was he a third mid round pick?
I think it's that far back. It's between, I think it's between second and third day for sure.
Yeah, second and third day pick, Julian Davenport playing one tackle position. The other one, you have Martinez Rankin, who's a rookie in this draft class, who I did not like at all when I watched him. I mean, he has the tools. He is like, you know, he's a Flowers type, in my opinion, with a lot of size, to be all the size and long arm things you look for in a tackle, but he was really bad in, as far as charting, game charting goes from Pro Football Focus, and I'll take their word on that, last year in college. And those guys have really struggled this year. I mean, you look at breaking them down. According to Pro Football Focus, Martinez Rankin has given up 10 pressures in two games. He has given up 6 hurries, 3 hits, and a sack. They have Davenport down for giving up 13 pressures in two games, 7 hurries, 4 hits, and 2 sacks, 5 penalties combined between the two of them. 5 penalties, that's awful. So, you know, is this something that – and obviously, you know, in addition to those guys – Kilamiti, who they have at guard, he's been really bad as well. Worse as a run blocker, but not great in pass protection either. So is this really a situation where the Giants, do you think the Giants pass rush, Giants pass defense from a pass rushing standpoint can potentially break out?
Yeah, this is a good one where the stats are going to intersect with the tape, because specifically what's beating Davenport and Rankin, Rankin's his name, I believe, it's speed to power rushes. And we know that, you know, maybe Lorenzo Carter is developing his other moves, but his main move is a speed rush. So I specifically am looking to see how Carter does, not only because of his speed rush, but additionally because against Davenport, his use of hands on his first strike, he's lost a lot of battles that way. Trey Flowers, I broke this out on Twitter, Trey Flowers does a really cool swipe to I forget the second part of the move was, but just absolutely schools him in a sack to the quarterback. So I don't expect, like we're saying, I don't expect Carter to be there yet, but I'm going to be looking for swim moves. I'm going to be looking for all types of drive moves. And I think that he's going to be able to execute that. And what ends up happening is when the tackles give up pressures, and this happened a lot over two games, you do see Watson step up in the pocket, but he loses sight downfield. He has very poor eye discipline downfield. You know, Dan asked, like, how was Eli Manning's last game? I wouldn't say it was great for him, but I'd throw it at like a 7 out of 10. If you want to grade it in comparison, if you just over two games for Watson, you're talking about like a 2 or 3 max. So there's a problem there. And what happens is also is that his ball carriage skills, Watson's ball carriage skills, when the pocket breaks down, I don't know, it's a really bad habit, but he holds the ball way out. And when he goes to throw on the run, he does the same thing. I would definitely look for forced fumbles this game. You know, and Betcher is the type of aggressive guy who gets his players going downhill, doing, you know, getting after the – that's what they're going to be keying on. And so I would definitely look for turnovers here.
Interesting. And then sticking on the Texans offense right now versus the Giants defense, we know today, based on the fact that Eli Apple missed another practice Thursday, very unlikely he plays this week. Vernon, another player, missed practice. Very unlikely he plays this week, which is really disappointing. I would have loved to see him go against these offensive tackles. Loved to see it. He looked I've said this before, I'm saying it again. He looked awesome to me this preseason in limited snaps. But that's what they're dealing with. So you get the scary matchup on the outside of B.W. Webb, Giants journeyman cornerback, who's now all of a sudden their number 2 cornerback, against Will Fuller. Now, I'm personally, Nick, and I know we talked about this right before we got on the show after rewatching right before the show, this all 22 of the Giants defense versus the Dallas offense, where we had a strong offensive line versus this Giants defense vis-a-vis this Texans offensive line, which is the complete opposite. I'm not as worried about this matchup for big plays. I think that it's going to be, unless, like you said, Watson does a better job of keeping his eyes downfield once he breaks free the pocket once the play gets off script a bit. I think that there's just not going to be enough time for him to take advantage of this matchup. Do you see it differently? Or are you a bit more worried about maybe B.W. Webb on Fuller? Like, to me, I'm more worried about the slot. I thought the Giants did not cover well in the slot against the Cowboys. So just give me an idea of where your bigger worry is there in the slot with Dante Deion against, I believe it's Ellington right now in their slot, or on the outside with Fuller versus Webb.
Yeah, I think Fuller even is the bigger issue, only because of the way they worked him last game. Last game was his first game back, right? He's oft injured What often injured, and what ends up happening there is the Texans offense actually without Fuller is actually he's almost more significant from a schematic standpoint than Hopkins, even though Hopkins is obviously top three in the league in terms of player. I think that the Fuller brings the dynamic of being able to take the top off the defense, as well being a very good route runner on the short side. So he actually helped Watson last game a lot with hitches and kind of comebacks and a lot of curls earlier in the game. And they weren't really setting it up per se, but he had a great touchdown in the second half of the game. His ability to create separation from really nothing is very hard. And so, as Dan makes the point, I concur that I don't think Watson's going to have a lot of time to make a lot of deep throws, but those rhythm fades are what scare me in the 20 to 25 range against both corners, any corner in that matter. His ability to kind of get good separation within 5 yards, really no matter what the corner is doing, I think it's going to be tough. I think overall the Giants can survive this, but it's going to come from the ability to get Watson moving around within the pocket, unsettled in the pocket is kind of the way to say it.
I think that's fair. And I think just bouncing back real quick to the flip side of this, before we get into the fan questions, kind of looking at, how the Giants offense might attack this Texans defense. I have some matchup. I mean, I have some points to make. First of all, the matchup I'm looking forward to is how the Giants work the middle of the field, because Zach Cunningham, the Texans inside linebacker, he's really struggled in pass corners here. He's allowed 9 receptions in just 2 games for 96 yards. That's not good. That's really bad in 2 games. And I think the Giants can take advantage of that. At the same time, I'm looking for them to get Odell Beckham Jr. involved more early, maybe on some slants, maybe on some quicker plays that get the ball into his hands, especially when he has Kevin Johnson, the Texans cornerback, lined up against him, because Johnson's really, really struggled with tackling this year. He's had 3 missed tackles in 2 games. If you miss a tackle in space against Beckham, that's the game-changing play right there. We've seen it happen enough to know that. And then lastly, just something that really interested me when I tried to look more into this Texans team is, I don't know if maybe all the injuries taking their toll or he's just not there physically where he used to be, but Whitney Mercilus, who used to be a really feared pass rusher, and I know the Texans, Jadeveon Clowney said he's making a comeback. He said he's going to play this game, which is not good news for the Giants by any means. And J.J. Watt is still around, though he has not played he's not played his dominant self this year. He's been decent, better than people are saying. But Whitney Mercilus, man, he's looked really bad. According to Pro Football Focus, he has not a single quarterback hurry, hit, sack, pressure, batted pass in 2 games on 122 snaps. That's not good. 43 pass rush snaps according to PFF. So What do you see based on the matchup of the Giants offense versus the Texans defense that really stood out to you?
Yeah, definitely. And just a quick on Mercilus, he got pancaked on a power pull last week, where it was the guard just absolutely smoked him. He had a good position too. He had good pad level, and the guy ends up on his back. And I saw the play, and I literally said ow. I mean, it was not something that was that pretty. And their edge rushers without Clowney are kind of mediocre. The whole story about this defensive line, and I'll get to a couple. Dan made some great points, but just working from the line back out, the whole thing is Watt, because Watt's swim move getting off the ball is what's going to be the issue for the offensive line. And he moves all over the formation. He's at 6 tech outside the tackle. He's going to be at 3 tech. He's going to move to a 4-eye, and he's going to make Omame and Flowers crap themselves. I mean, look, that's the bottom line. This guy's a top 2 or 3 talent. And although the stats don't show it for the first 2 games, he was getting the penetration on tape, a lot of it. They can use the penetration against him a little bit by, I think they're going to try to run some counter. They're going to get some misdirection to basically use those resulting holes that he creates by getting so far upfield against them a little bit. That's just kind of the biggest worry that I have from against their defense. The other side of it too, just to watch out on third down, they absolutely love to take Watt and put him on the outside in a 6 tech. Then what they love to do is rotate their safety, their opposite side safety late, and have him blitz the other side. So what they're looking for is some level of slide to Watt or some double team, and then have the backside on an island and attack the backside with their safeties. And it's not just Matthew, it's Batamose, from the guy from New England who's there now. They've got a bunch of athletic safeties that the story of this defense is their defensive line, specifically Watt, and their secondary. That's the strength. The middle is exactly what Dan said, or the weakness is exactly what Dan said, over the middle at the linebacking side and at some parts of coverage in the secondary. So that's what the Giants have to hit. But what I would definitely watch for those two things, because the blitz will come, and it's something that the Giants are going to be ready for, and it's going to be a little bit of a delay, and Eli's probably going to have to be able to pick that up.
Yep. Agreed on that standpoint. All right. I think it's that time of the show. We're going to jump into the questions. I'm going to start with this one by Hefty Lefty. It's a long question, but I'm going to get kind of to the summary, the crux of it. And obviously a great Twitter name there. Little shout out to the old Jerry Lorenzen. Because Eli's had bad games, I know me and Nick have pretty made it pretty clear we don't agree that Eli had a bad game against Jacksonville, but, you know, others claim to be that. They're cherry picking. Is he done? So I'll let you dive into this first.
No. And there's a lot of questions of, like, when do you pull them, or we're not there yet. I don't even think we're at a stage yet where you want to really think about benching him. I would say, is he done? No, but I think that, you know, the mental processing has to be watched now for the next 2 to 3 games. One game does not make a career, but after 5, if you have the same issues that aren't improving in this offense, you know, maybe is it even thought of then, you know, they're not going to make a change unless the situation gets very dire. It's nowhere near there. But beyond that, that's focusing on the bad, harnessing the good. The guy can still place the ball. The guy can still make athletic plays for sure. I think that overall his consistency has to be better. But, you know, when given proper time, and I think when with the right level of what is, you know, of being used to this offense, I absolutely think he can function. I think that everything else has to come back. And I think a lot of these plays that are failing, everyone's looking for one big solution. And, you know, they're blaming the quarterback because he's the leader. But guess what? Like, if everyone does their job, I think you're going to see more successful plays, then you have a chance for wins. So I don't think he is done. And yeah, I think that there's more to go. And I think that we'll see.
Yeah, I'm with you, Nick. Before this game, I would have said this is a stupid question, but I was definitely alarmed by some of the issues with processing, mental processing in this game, and, you know, just not making anticipation throws, not seeing routes get open. That could have been big plays. So we'll see. We'll see what happens there. And that's something we'll keep an eye on. But as of now, I would say no to that question. Kyle Backoffin asks, will they try to get OBJ more involved in week 3? In week 1, it was great to see he was moved around a lot, but I don't think they moved around as much in week 2. So I'll start real quick there, Nick, and then throw it to you. Mike Shula, the Giants offense coordinator, spoke with reporters today on Thursday, and he basically made it clear they're going to try to get Odell Beckham the ball early and often in this game. And I don't love the idea of saying that before the game. I don't see any reason to say that. Just why not keep that away from the Texans? But it's not a huge deal because the Texans are probably expecting that anyway. Honestly, it's Odell Beckham Jr. But what do you think, Nick, about that question?
I haven't specifically looked at the stats, but, you know, guys want to see him in the slot. They want to see him all over. I'd say, yeah, and you want him to get the ball early. I got to say, though, I think that they went overboard a little bit with the distribution to a wider range of targets last game. Right. But I do think a better way to go for them. I think they want to get all players involved. So does that mean, I think someone said it today that he basically had 2 touches by the 3rd quarter, right? Like that, you can't be that low, but I would favor that side of more distribution over 10 targets in the first quarter and a half, that type of thing.
Yeah. I think me and you actually might disagree there for the first time on this podcast in probably a while. I personally think this can be more of a 2-man game with Barkley and Beckham. And I understand the idea, or not, I don't want to say a 2-man game. I don't want to, you know, I understand the idea of getting Ingram involved. And I thought one of the biggest issues in this game was that they did not take advantage of the seam with Evan Ingram. And that's something they need to start doing in general. When these teams play them like Dallas played them, just give him opportunities, because there were opportunities over the middle, the intermediate middle of the field. So, I don't want to say make it a complete 2-man game, but I'm fine getting scheming ways to get Odell Beckham Jr. the ball, I guess is what I would say to that question. And I think they will, and I think they've made that pretty clear. Let's move on here. Giants Dreamer asks, do you think with the talent on this roster, the Giants can win more than a handful? So I guess that we'll call that 5. Can the Giants win more than 5 games this year?
I think yes. But you got to have all – kind of what I said before, you got to have all parts start executing on the same page. on a play-by-play basis to win those battles. So I definitely think that. I think it's a tough division. I think it's a really tough division to go north of 8-8 for the team, 8-8 for the way the team is right now. But I think it's total. I think they can win more than a handful.
Yeah, I'm with you here. I think that I like what I've seen from the defense so far. And we didn't even get a chance to get to that. So I actually want to probably, you know what, let's do that real quick, Nick. I'll just give you quick breakdown of what I saw from the defense. And you can do it to me. Eli Apple, to me, he jumped out on tape. I thought he was excellent in coverage. And one of the biggest misplays, and we're gonna get to your question in a second, Giant Streamer. I'll circle it back, don't worry, before throwing it back to Nick. But to me, Eli Apple, because I just didn't feel like we touched enough on the defense as well, so we'll do it real quick. To me, like I said, Eli Apple jumped out. There was a huge play in this game that could have changed the game in the second quarter when the Giants were down 7 points, where Connor Barwin jumped to try to make that interception, and it kind of like batted around in his hands and it dropped. If Barwin's not there in that lane, guys, or if the ball somehow gets through him, that's 7 points for the Giants. When you watch the All-22, Eli Apple is essentially running the interception back for a touchdown if the ball gets – in my eyes. And he is so far ahead of this route. If that ball gets to its spot, Eli Apple is pick-sixing this ball. And it's a game-changing play. Alec Ogletree, I don't understand the hate on Giants Twitter from people. I guess they're just not watching the All-22. They're not watching it. He was all over the field. He made 3 plays in the run game, great plays in the screen passing game. He made a play on a reverse early in the game with Tavon Austin, where this was probably going to be a touchdown with Austin. Ogletree committed to the – started on the left side of the formation and – or the Giants left, the Cowboys right, and basically moved forward to stop the run there where the ball was moving. Then it was reversed. He somehow reversed across the field and ran down Tavon Austin. He jumped out to me. Damon Harris, Dalvin Tomlinson, I thought they won a lot of battles. Like I said earlier, Lorenzo Carter's speed to me was at another level. And then just on the negative side, we talked about B.W. Webb. For me as well, Curtis Riley, I didn't like not only the angle he took on that early touchdown. I thought he took some bad angles in the run game. And there was a play late in the game where Dak Prescott missed a wide open safety in the end zone or tight end in the end zone. And he was the lone safety on that play. And he should have. And it was, I thought it was his bad reaction time that kind of blew that coverage. Nick, just quickly. And so, like I'm saying, I like what I've seen from the defense. I think this offense really has a better chance than people give it to patch things together. Again, it's 2 games, guys. People are making such a hard overreaction to 2 games in the NFL. We've seen over and over things change so drastically. We give this team a little bit of time. But, Nick, real quick before we jump into the next question, I did want to get your kind of just brief, quick takeaways, main points on the defense from the tape.
Yeah, totally concur with really you hit a lot of the nails on the head. It's a lot better than people would expect on tape. The biggest thing that jumped at me on tape, and I had to write about it, was I like what Betcher, a lot of the play calling that Betcher had. It was aggressive, and he put his best players in positions to succeed at key points of the game, and they just didn't. And then talking about Janoris Jenkins, and it's not just on the go route. He had a specific coverage that was called on a key 3rd and 8 where Jenkins just couldn't make the play. And it was a play where afterwards they showed his face on TV and the commentators were talking about how Prescott was making some line call, you know, before the snap. And Collinsworth completely misses that. Like, this really should have kind of been a pick six or a deheading of Cole Beasley on the right play. And it wasn't. And so you saw stuff like that. You saw stuff like the blown assignment one for Tomlinson. Well, I think it was Tomlinson on one of the big runs for Zeke at near the end of the game. They're very, very close. And so I take that, honestly, as bullish, because it's like, if you fix the mistakes, you've got kind of a lot of the pieces there. You know, is it perfect? No. Is there a lot of holes? Sure. But there's holes in every defense. And I like the attitude there. I definitely like the attitude there for sure.
Yeah. And by the way, guys, I promise on the next one, we won't do the takeaways from the defense. This week. So just kind of missed it on this one. But Evan D asks, does the Giants offensive line have any chance of being adequate this week against Houston?
Oh boy, you want it or I want it? I'll jump. Definitely has a chance. I think that Watt's going to be a problem. I think that, you know, if Clowney goes on the same side, it's going to be a problem. I think that it's going to have to be a good measure for play caller and quarterback to really help them out when they can. But I think that all as well, although the Giants had some, you know, to take Jeff Schwartz's words, atrocious plays in terms of some breakdowns, they also had a lot of good plays, and I think they need to tweak those numbers and get that better. So I definitely think it's there in terms of being adequate. In terms of really being dominant, no, not against Watt. Not, I mean, I don't think anyone really can, honestly, on this roster or on really even the NFC East roster, any team on the NFC East. So I just think it's going to be a tough game, and they're going to have to get through that.
Yeah, I think there were enough mental errors that they can – that can be cleaned up, that they do have a chance of being adequate. I think I would pretty much say that's spot on how I see it. Rob asks, at this point, what can realistically be done about the offensive line? And do you think it's a question of skill level or simply practicing to have a more cohesive union as an offensive line? Or do players need to be cut and who do we need to replace them with? So I'll jump in first and you can add on here. I don't think there's anything to be done about the offensive line. I've made this point over and over and I'll make it again. There's an offensive lineman don't grow on the tree. Don't grow on trees, guys. This is the shallowest position, in my opinion, in the entire NFL, including quarterback. There's none on the waiver wire worth having. Teams are struggling to find a third swing tackle, as the Giants are a prime example of that. So this is a situation where there's not enough hitting in practice during the training camp. There's not enough practices in general. So it's just a matter of, I think they're going to get better as they play more snaps, real live game snaps together. And, you know, should anybody be cut? I say no. Who do you replace them with? I say, you tell me. I have no idea. I don't think there's anyone on the waiver wire worth picking up. So maybe, you know, they try to work in Brian Mahalik, the guy they signed off the Steelers practice squad, you know, the former defensive end from Boston College who converted to offensive tackle. Maybe at some point he's ready. I don't know. I personally don't think so. Maybe Chad Wheeler is ready at some point in the Giants' eyes. But, you know, I think it's just a matter of them playing more together. Do you see it any differently?
No, I think that, you know, the Spencer Pulley pickup was good in terms of depth and backup. And he's definitely something that could probably – he definitely play center. He can definitely play guard on the tackle side of this of the house. I mean, I really think that Wheeler is worse than Flowers. I know people are going to snap out and lose it and all that stuff over that. But, look – you know, I think that Flowers is on the roster next year at this point in time. No, but guess what? Like, that's like the Giants, like many teams in the NFL, have to find ways to win with what they got. It's just, it is what it is. And they made their bed when, and I don't want to get into that in terms of what their draft situation was like and what the choices they made there. So, you know, I think they knew this and they knew it wasn't going to happen in a year. And so when you talk about slashing people, it'd be great if they had, you know, 99 guys on the roster and you could go down the line, you know, and there's a lot of people, but there's not. And so I think that they just got to kind of grit through this and see if they can do it.
Agreed. This is a question to me that is better for the offseason. Right. He asks, and I'll let you tackle this one because you did much more work than me on this one. How do you compare Pat Shurmur's scheme with the Vikings in 2017 compared to what you've seen so far from the Giants in 2018 in terms of creativity, play design, utilizing the player's strengths?
It's a great question.
It is.
Have to come back and say a couple things. Number one, to start off, a little bit more isolation routes this past game than you would see, and I would say more so than you did for most of the season in Minnesota. So a little bit of a tweak there, to try to tweak to what Manning's good at. And in terms of creativity, it's very interesting. I don't think Pat Shurmur is a very creative play designer. I think that the creativity side is going to come from Shula in this offense. I think you absolutely have seen that with more of the spread shotgun looks that you've seen the Giants employ a lot of. A lot of 11 personnel sets that they've been using, you know, from the backside, you know, tags that they have that aren't really RPOs, but they're kind of looks that you know, where the backside is doing something. That's definitely Shula's influence. So I would say it's about the same in terms of creativity. Where Pat Shurmur is very good traditionally is in his actual play calling, where in terms of opening script to attacking different parts of the defense, to setting up the game for his quarterback to really excel, as well as to not like a massive adjustment at halftime guy. I don't have the numbers there for, like, you know, his DVOA at halftime, you know, for the second half, all that stuff. But just from tape, I would say no, you know, that's not really his thing. It's more knowing how to orchestrate a drive when you need it. And I think that's the strength of almost everyone in the Andy Reid coaching tree. And we know that Shurmur has a few trees that he's attached to, but he definitely takes that part of it where he can orchestrate a drive when you need it. I think you saw it in the third quarter. I think you need to see more of it. So overall, I would say the creativity is about the same. I'd say the play design is only different because of the spread elements that Shula is bringing. Utilizing the player strengths, Dan and I, we really hit it on the red zone side. I'm not seeing it there yet. Not really seeing it there yet, specifically on third down. But I think overall, it's going to get better. And I think I honestly think he's still getting used to what his quarterback can do, what his quarterback's comfortable doing when things get tough, when players can get open, and that type of thing. So I think it's going to improve. And certainly, if you look, people forget he actually started play calling for Minnesota. That was the 16th season after North Turner got fired. And if I remember correctly, it wasn't like he was, they weren't kicking it immediately when he took over. So I would give him some time here. And again, this is what's so crazy is they're 0-2, and it feels like, it's almost like he's on the hot seat. Like, at least that's what the way I'm reading a lot of the Giants Twitter, that's my interpretation. So anyway, I would leave it at that
interpretation. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Twitter is out of their minds right now.
Really. It really feels like he's in the hot seat. I feel like I'm defending him. it's like, there's two games. You're talking about 8 days. In 8 days, he's all of a sudden like on the outs. So I would classify it that way. And I think that it'll get better.
Yeah. And I mean, guys, I'm bringing it back to this. The Giants moved the ball for 324 yards against the Jaguars defense. And we're two Evan Engram drops away from another huge gains in the passing game. And Eric, you want to throw more out? Eric Flowers, the hold that negated a 34-yard completion to Engram, the drop by Shepard late in the game. I mean, they were driving to win that game. And that's against a Jaguars team that blew out the Patriots the next week. So let's not go overreact. Things change week to week so much in the NFL. But let's move on. Big Blue Teeth asks, what percentage of time are we in 12 or jumbo personnel? And do you think we'll see an increase in that number now? So the Giants are only in jumbo 3 snaps week 1. I don't have the numbers on week 2. I don't remember seeing it as much. And the 12 personnel jump from week 1 to week 2. I'll say that I think we're going to see an increase in that, but it's also so dependent on the game script that I don't know if you can say, have a definitive answer for every week.
The other thing, and this is a great question, and people get way overreact on this, but if you go to Twitter and you say jumbo or to football guys, that is 23 personnel. That's how the old school guys think it. And from a slang perspective, almost it means 1-3, a heavy personnel set, like with 3 tight ends to one side. That's just a technicality. So if we're talking about like jumbo being 23, the Giants aren't going to feature that as much. Jumbo being 1-3. I think like Dan said, not a lot. I think you'll see a little more of it. And I do think when they pass from that set, they're going to have – I like it when they pass from the set. They actually had a cool RPO design in the Jacksonville game off of that with double slants out of shotgun out of 1-3 personnel. So I think you'll see a little bit of an uptick. And I think overall there should be a little bit more distribution, but there hasn't – in terms of the personnel sets, but there has not been as of yet.
Okay. I think I would agree with that, and that was a good answer. I didn't have as much on. So we'll move on to Subwoofer asks – we kind of touched on this, so we'll do this a little quicker. What are the options on the O-line? Grant goes in. If another guy gets hurt, who's up, who's out? Just depends. If a tackle gets hurt, they might look elsewhere. I don't know what they'll do. Or they might turn to Wheeler. If a guard gets hurt, they'll probably move Greco over to guard and put in Spencer Pulley at center. Pulley started 16 games for the Chargers last year, played it hurt, did not play well. I think that's probably their option. Nick, do you have anything else to add there? I think that's pretty much straightforward, correct?
Yeah, no, that's about right. And I think that, that checks out.
And then also Subwoofer asks, is Eli having problems adjusting to the new schemes, or is it timing, or is it something else? We did touch a lot on this earlier. Do you have one final take on that, Nick?
Not really. I think we've kind of hit that. I think it's going to get better. And honestly, if it's week 6 and we're still at the same issue, I think, it's a different conversation. But for now, I think we're okay.
Yep. All right. Well, that's all the questions we had on today's show. We're going to wrap it up as we like to with some more god-awful predictions. So far, we haven't been anywhere close to predicting the final score. I'm going to take another spin and go. Giants put up 27 points this week. 27, yeah. I do think they're going to hit some big plays against the Texans defense. I'm going to say 27-21 Giants. I've now predicted they would win the first two games, which they lost. Hopefully, I'm not a jinx. Hopefully, we can turn this thing around for the fact that nobody wants to follow a crappy team. Nick, what is your prediction? You feel free to go against the Giants for once.
Not this week. I think they can win this game. I think that it's going to be one of those games where you're going to have a lot of periods of dead offense and then a lot of periods of, you know, like big plays out of nowhere on both sides of the ball. Just both teams have a lot of playmakers. You know, look at the position groups for both these teams outside of like the tight end position for the Texans. And I'm not knocking that group, but just, you know, they don't have a lot of household names. These guys are, you know, there's a lot of chance for scoring here. I think it's going to be like a weirdly like 24-23 really tight game.
Yeah. And guys, just so you guys all know about this, the Texans, by the way, are not looking – the Texans don't have that much talent in the secondary right now. So let's keep that in mind. This is probably easily the easiest matchup the Giants have had just from a personnel standpoint, their offense against the defense. Now, that obviously the Texans, if they get Clowney back with Clowney and Watt, that's not easy. But, you know, that second and third level for the Texans is not nearly what it was for the Jaguars and for the Dallas Cowboys. But so hopefully we can see some things turn around. But on that note – we're going to sign off. Good luck to the Giants this week, and we'll see you guys soon. I was driving through the misty rain, searching for you.